Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Good evening, folks. Very welcome along to the Big Red Bench. Rory here with you until 7 p.m. Busy hour of sport coming your way. Between now and 7 o'clock, coming up, we're going to be talking to Davin O'Neill about taking over the Cove Wanderers job in the middle of a pandemic. We'll talk to Dav in a bit. We're also going to hear from Adam O'Reilly. He signed for Preston on loan from Waterford earlier on in the week. Signed for Waterford on loan from Preston. So we're going to talk to Adam in a bit about his plans for that loan spell. We're going to talk to Tom Savage of the rugby website Three Red Kings. We're going to talk about Ireland's win over Italy, Italy's future in the Six Nations, Joey Carberry's return to Munster, and plenty more. Also going to hear from Andy Farrell as well before 7 o'clock. You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. I hate to be all cliche, but there is a grand stretch in the evening. This is the first Big Red Bench of the year where it's been bright at the kickoff of the show, which is fantastic to see. The evening's getting longer. Lovely day in Cork today. Hope you all enjoyed your time out in the sunshine, and thank you indeed for tuning into the show this evening. Going to get you up to date on everything that's been happening today. 71 minutes on the clock at Old Trafford. Chelsea, Manchester United scoreless. Not a great game by any stretch of the imagination. Man United looking for a win that would cut Man City's lead at the top to 10 points. A win for Chelsea would see them go up to fourth. So we're going to see what happens there. But with 18 minutes on the clock, 72 minutes on the clock there, and it is Chelsea 0, Manchester United 0. Earlier on today, Tottenham had a good win today, and it was the Gareth Bale show. Guy Swindles.
4 Burnley 0. Comfortable for Spurs, really comfortable for Spurs, with Gareth Bale taking the headlines, scoring twice. First, after just 2 minutes, tucking home a Son cross. Kane and Moura also scored in a first half where Spurs dominated. In the second, the best goal of the game came when Son, driving from his own half, set up Bale to curl home deliciously, goal 4. After that, Burnley huffed and puffed. Spurs missed more chances. They're back. Spurs 4, Burnley 0.
This is Gareth Bale speaking full time. Says he's happy with his day's work.
Obviously, been building up for a little bit to get back fully fit, and yeah, felt comfortable today. My form's coming back, so yeah, nice to help the team in whatever way I can.
A good win for Arsenal today as they beat Leicester City. Nikesh Rugan was at the King Power Stadium.
Leicester City 1, Arsenal 3. A really good all-round performance from Arsenal in the end. Leicester took the lead early on through Yuri Tillemans. It was a brilliant individual effort from him, but from then on, Mikel Arteta's side slowly took control of the game. They equalised from a David Luiz header, and on the stroke of half-time, they were awarded a penalty when Wilfred Ndidi handballed in his area. Alexandre Lacazette slotted home the spot kick. Their third was a brilliant counter-attack at the beginning of the second half. Lots of intricate passing, and Nicolas Pepe eventually swept home from close range. Arsenal are then into the top half with that win. Leicester City miss out on the chance to go second. It finished Leicester 1, Arsenal 3.
So that's Arsenal to within 8 points of the top four after that game. Just a second victory in six in the Premier League. Boss Mikel Arteta says his side showed great character.
Coming here after a very short turnaround from Benfica and go down very early puts the game in a really difficult position against a Leicester team that probably is the best scenario they can have. But I think we played some really good moments in the game.
So a tough one for Leicester. They couldn't bounce back from their Europa League exit on Thursday. More bad news for them as well, with winger Harvey Barnes going off with a knee injury in the second half, and his manager Brendan Rodgers is anticipating a lengthy layoff for Barnes.
It looks like he needs to go in for an operation, so he's probably going to be minimum 6 weeks. So a little bit of the bone in his knee's come off, so he'll need that repair.
Ouch, that sounds painful. Crystal Palace and Fulham were scoreless. Ian Beach.
Crystal Palace 0, Fulham 0, but Fulham could have won. They had 5 good chances in the second half. A Joachim Andersen free kick just wide, 3 great efforts from Josh Maguire, and a curled effort from Adamola Lookman that went just wide. The first half of this one, maybe even the first 60 minutes, was pretty stale, with both teams ultimately trying to avoid conceding, but it was Fulham who did the most to open the game up, and that's got to give them hope going forward. Crystal Palace 0, Fulham 0.
And the late kick-off this evening's 7:15, Sheffield United taking on the champions Liverpool. Elsewhere in Scotland, St Johnstone have won the Scottish League Cup for the first time in their history as they beat Livingston by 1-0 in the final at Hampden Park, thanks to a goal from Sean Rooney. Manager Callum Davidson says it's a big moment for the club.
probably made me a little bit emotional. I think I'm just delighted for everybody involved. I think it's difficult times for everybody, and pretty special moment. And hopefully people back in Perth and support St Johnstone can celebrate it and give them a bit of cheer.
Yeah, fantastic win there for them. Cork's Jace Kabea on the bench for Livingston today, but didn't get a run out at Hampden. 76 minutes on the clock now at Stamford Bridge till Chelsea 0, Manchester United 0. Some sad news today. Former Newcastle and West Ham manager Glenn Roeder has passed away at the age of 65 following a long battle with a brain tumour. As a player, he was a defender for clubs including Leighton Orient, Newcastle and QPR. The League Managers Association chairman Howard Wilkinson has described Roeder as one of the country's most respected coaches and says he will be sorely missed. Here at home in pre-season friendly action today, Cove Ramblers losing out to Shamrock Rovers in a pre-season friendly. 3-1 was how that finished earlier on today. Cork City currently in action against Shamrock Rovers as well. Second half is just underway there, and it is Shamrock Rovers 1, Cork City 1. Cian Murphy with Cork City's goal there. Roy McIlroy is in contention at the WGC Workday Championship as he prepares to get his final run underway. He'll tee off from 11 under par and just about half past 6, 4 shots behind the leader Colin Morikawa. Shane Lowry is 2 over with 2 holes left to play today. Seamus Power meanwhile best of the Irish in the final day of the Puerto Rico Open. He's 11 under par after 6. He's in a tie for 9th and 5 shots off the pace. Patrick Harrington 2 under through 8. Leona Maguire's 4 under par after 13 holes of her final round of the Gainbridge at the LPGA Tour. That leaves the Cavan native in a tie for 21st, 12 shots off the pace. In rugby, Leinster in action in the Pro 14 this afternoon, or this evening I should say. They're taking on Glasgow Warriors, 30 minutes on the clock. It is Leinster 21, Warriors 7. In snooker, John Higgins leads Ronnie O'Sullivan 6 frames to 2 in the Players' Championship final in Milton Keynes. The decider is a best of 19 frames contest. And racing today was at Nace. The William Mullins trained Echoes in the Rain won the feature race of the day. The Paddy Power Betting Shop novice hurdle Paul Townend got it the 5-year-old to victory after going out the 11-8 odds on favourite. Alright, going to start the show with football, and Davin O'Neill has become the new Cove Wanderers boss, replacing Darren Murphy, who's taken up a coaching role with Cove Ramblers. And I spoke to Davin, the former Cork City and Cove Ramblers player, about taking over Cove Wanderers in the middle of a pandemic and what he's expecting for the first division of the League of Ireland as well.
Well, I suppose I finished playing a couple of years back. I think it was 2016, which is 5 years ago now. It's hard to believe, but it passes so quick. It's something that really arose because Darren Murphy vacated the position, going to the under-19 Cove Ramblers local side. So it was a position came up, and I thought about it. I saw it online, and I thought about it. At first, you say to yourself, don't you, will I put myself in the hat for that? And what does it entail? Because I've never done something like that before. So there were them questions. But essentially, you talk to people that you have respect for, maybe that was experience, and you make your decision based on that then. So I did all that, and I decided to apply for the job and go for it then.
Yeah, because obviously it's, above all else, it's a massive, I suppose, investment in your time as well, because you're out training a couple of nights a week, a match of the weekend as well, so family life has to be balanced out and all that crack, so it all has to be weighed up.
Oh yeah, I've noticed a big difference already, even, you know, balance is the key word there. But yeah, it's something I have to embrace, adapt to, and kind of, I suppose, rethink things. Yeah. But I see that as a positive. You're learning something new. Mm-hmm. I don't want to stand still ever, you know. I'm eager to drive on and learn something new and experience new things. So I'd embrace that.
What advice did Murph have for you?
Well, I played with Darren. I played with Darren at Cove when he was a young midfielder, hard as nails, great player. He always had a great heart, you know. But I met him last week down at Wanderers when he was handing over everything, really. And he had some great advice, you know. He's done some fantastic courses, and he said basically it's your footballing experience and your knowledge through playing the game that will stand to you know, in good stead. And he gave me some nice advice, and I appreciated that.
Have you been able to, actually, you obviously haven't been able to meet up with the lads yet, but have you talked to the players and stuff at this stage?
Yes, I have. I've contacted. That was the first step, really, first tick the box exercise. Just to let them know that, I suppose, first of all, ask them how they are, how they're keeping, and introduce myself to all the players. I know a lot of them, but I don't know some of them. So it was just an introduction, really, on my behalf. And just to let them know that I'll be planning things going forward and this is my number, that sort of thing. So it's just to get the ball rolling and a bit of formality, I suppose, an organisation for them.
I spoke to David O'Leary yesterday about signing for Ramblers from Avondale, and he was talking about the frustration of the last year about not being able to play football in the Munster Senior League. I'd imagine all the Wanderers players the exact same, frustrated not being able to kick a ball.
Well, yeah, I spoke to all the players, and they really, really, really want to get going again, you know. And I think it is that structure of having that organisation in your week, whether it be involved in a football team or work or what have you, you have that structure and you have that kind of goal setting mentality. So I can't wait to get going, and I know they can't either.
I suppose Wanderers, a big club, got to the Intermediate Cup final a couple of years back, in the Premier Division the last number of years. So things are going very well for the club as a whole over the last couple of years.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I remember, I think it was 2014 when I joined Ramblers as a player most recently. I left Ramblers and joined Wanderers. It was in 2014 when I finished League of Ireland with Ramblers that I joined Wanderers. And at that time, the club actually didn't have a senior team. And it was Eric McCarthy, a local guard here, who took over management. And he and Darryl Burke and myself, basically as a trio, went in, and I was still playing at the time, doing a bit of coaching as well, and basically took over the team and got a senior team up and running again. And great credit has to go to Eric McCarthy for that, by the way. But we started in the second division due to not having a senior team the year before. So we basically had to start from the bottom tier and work our way up. And we did that within the 2 year period, and Wanderers in the Premier ever since.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, like, what are the your immediate goals for Wanderers over the next year, I suppose?
Well, they've picked up a great position and a great start to the current season. That's great credit to Darren Murphy and Quinny and all the team that was down there. I want to obviously set that as the bar. So, I mean, that's where we're starting. It's a great position to start and to take over a team. They're 1 point off the top of the table. I mean, there's some great teams in that Premier Division. I want to be competing at the top end, and I think a Cove Wanderers team, a Cove team, should be always competing in the top end of the divisions.
And what kind of football do Davin O'Neill teams play?
Well, I won't be setting my stall out really to defend. Let's just put it that way. I was a winger / forward. Paul Doolin didn't think I was a forward, but I was a winger. But yeah, it will be based obviously on some of the structure defensively. But I want exciting players creating innovative moves and basically scoring goals. Obviously, doesn't every manager say that though?
exactly, yeah. But I mean, like, Wanderers have some fantastic attacking players at the disposal anyway, so you're off to a good start there.
Well, what I've noticed, and like, I've liaised with Darren last week, like I said, and he gave me a great run through of each player and their individual qualities. And again, he had some fantastic advice, but there are some fantastic young players in that team, and I want to, I suppose, push them on to achieve what they can do, and I suppose set them goals and give them advice from my playing days, and that's really what I aim to do to develop them young players.
I suppose as well, with the catchment area of Cove being so big as well, I suppose developing the younger players and getting them through to the senior team must be a key part of the whole philosophy of the club as well.
Well, it is now. It is now, certainly. Hasn't always been that way in Cove. But the current schoolboys club, Springfield Ramblers, have obviously provided some fantastic players to both Cove Ramblers and now Cove Wanderers. So it's really a step up from Springfield Ramblers schoolboys into Cove Wanderers now and potentially Cove Ramblers then. And that link is something that's very important for young players in the town. It's a link that was broken for a lot of years for young players, and they didn't benefit from having them clubs working together. But now they are. And it's really, really positive to be a young footballer in Cove, to have these opportunities to develop and to progress in your footballing career.
And speaking of, I suppose, the clubs working together, the redevelopment of Old Church Park, when that happens, is going to be fantastic for football on the island as a whole.
Oh yeah, that's a massive, massive project, and it's a long time coming. So I'm really, really looking forward to having a facility like that. I've played in AstroTurfs, and before this, I managed the under 14 Springfield Ramblers. So I've travelled to a lot of AstroTurfs in Cork, and there's some fine AstroTurfs there. But it always kind of bugged me that we didn't have something like that in Cove. And it took a long, long time, but some fantastic people got together and put their heads together and formed Cove for Football and brought clubs together to the table. And as a result, we could be looking at a massive, massive facility in Cove, like in other towns. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it should be absolutely fantastic. Speaking of Ramblers, they're kicking off against Cork City on the 26th of March. A fantastic way to start the First Division, and what's going to be a very competitive First Division this year, Daf?
Oh yeah, really looking forward to that. And as a member of Cove Ramblers, I can't wait to go down there and watch First Division games, especially against Cork City. You know, what a way to start the season. It's a pity there won't be a full house there like there was in the last derby. But like you said, Stuart Ashton, we talked with Stuart Ashton and Colin Healy before, two fantastic guys. I mean, really, really, I played with Colin, and I was coached by Stuart at Cork City at some stages. Really, really, really good guys who have both clubs at heart. And I have no doubt that they'll have massive, massive inspiration and effect on their players. And they'll both be competing at the top end, no doubt.
And Dave, I suppose it's shaping up to be such a competitive First Division. I mean, like, I can't remember as competitive a First Division like this in I don't know how long.
When I was playing, there was a massive, massive kind of jump from the First Division up to the Premier Division. During them years. Nowadays, like you said, there's John Caulfield at Galway. I'm sure John Caulfield will have Galway as strong as anyone in that division. Shelburne are really, really, really coming to the fore in the last few years. I mean, they were really down in kind of, I suppose, in a place that no club wants to be previous years. But they seem to be back and organised, and I know Stephen Henderson is up there helping the academy as well. Again, another fantastic guy. I know that it'll be a competitive division, but that's exactly what you want as a player and as a fan. That's only going to make more exciting games for us to watch, Rory.
Yeah, I can't wait for kickoff. Dav, been a pleasure talking to you this morning, buddy. Very best luck for the season ahead of Wanderers.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Roar.
The Big Red Bench on Cork City FM, and that is Davin O'Neill, former Cove Ramblers and Cork City player, on taking over Cove Wanderers. Very best luck to him, Dav, one of the good guys. Very nice guy, so very best luck to him in his job as Wanderers boss, and looking forward to seeing them when the Munster Senior League season gets back underway. So hopefully that'll be soon enough anyway, because everyone just wants to get back playing football. Chelsea 0, Manchester United 0. It's approaching full time there, in fact, into the time added on now. Looks like it's going to peter out into a scoreless draw there. So 3 minutes to be added on. We'll keep posted on that one. I want to talk now to Adam O'Reilly, The Corkman signed for Waterford on loan from Preston North End earlier on in this week. So he's done that to get more game time. He's signing on loan until the end of June. So I got a chance to speak to the former Ringmahon Rangers player to talk about the move.
It came about. I was just training away with the first team stuff over at Preston, and I was told that I needed to go out on loan and get some experience and stuff. And the agent did some work for me, and Waterford came along, and that's how the opportunity arose, really.
And Kevin Sheedy in charge down there, of course, legendary figure in the game. You've had a chance to talk to him yet, or?
Yeah, I've actually met up with him. Met up with him once. Kevin Sheedy's a top guy. From the first impression I got from him, he seems like a very top person, and seems to be quite funny as well, to be fair to him. So I'm looking forward to working under him.
So how did he sell Waterford to you? Did he have to sell it much to you?
Yeah, I'm a hard person to please, as people say, but no, he sold it to me very well. He's explained what their goals are for the season, and kind of the players that they brought in and the type of team that he has. And after he said that, look, my eyes kind of opened up, and I thought, okay, it's probably going to be the best move for me. So I decided to go with them.
I suppose first team opportunities at Preston have been limited. I mean, like the gaffer there kind of say, look, you just kind of have to go and get some first team experience, kind of get some game time, was it?
Yeah, that was the case, really. He said, look, I need to go out and get some experience. And that's exactly what I have to do now. So that's why I went to Waterford, because look, it's top league, and there's going to be a lot of very good players in the league. So to kind of play in it will do me the world of good. So I'm just looking forward to playing now.
And I suppose with the link that Preston have with Cork City, and I suppose you've been a Cork boy, I suppose there will probably be kind of people asking, like, what was Cork City in the table for you, and was that under consideration at any time?
Yeah, look, it was on the table, as well as a few more teams, but from a personal point of view, look, you just gotta look at it and see how is it going to benefit you the best going forward in my career. And I just felt that going to Waterford would probably benefit me the best. And obviously in the top league, it's probably going to do me the world good. As I said, again, some very, very good players. So I felt that would give me the best benefits going back into the Preston team then, pushing to get a place for them then as well.
So it was just surely, I suppose, the Premier Division kind of aspect of it was, I suppose, the main consideration, so?
Yeah, you get players, a lot of players from England actually come to the league, so it's kind of one of the main leagues that they go to and try and benefit themselves, as well as what I'm doing now. I just felt that was kind of the deal breaker, really, because I just need to push on now and kind of start making a name for myself and show everyone what I can do in the highest league possible.
So have you set a target for yourself for the next couple of months? So it's until junior loan is it?
Yeah, look, I've got a couple of targets, but I'd say the main target is obviously to play week in, week out and get games under my belt, but as I said a while ago, to make a name for myself and show everyone what I can really do, and go back to England, showing clubs that I am a very good player and what I can bring to the table.
I suppose
the main goals.
The media target, I suppose, is to break into the starting 11 as quickly as possible, I'd imagine.
Yeah, everyone's goal in football is to get to England and play to the best league you can. And look, obviously my goal at the moment is get into the Preston team and then impress there and maybe even go to the Premier League, is what the end goal will be. Just play as much football as I can throughout.
Of course, Alan Brown, fellow Corkman, fellow Ringmahon Ranger at Preston, did you talk to him for advice on your next move and stuff like that?
Yeah, he was actually a factor going into it. I spoke to him about it, just what's he thinking stuff, and look, we all have our own opinions and stuff. But he's helped me along the way anyway, through my loans and stuff. He's been a great help to me, and I appreciate him a lot for it, as well as Seanie McGuire. So they've been two great helps when it comes to kind of the football side and bettering myself. Because if I ever had a question or a query or anything, I'd go to them and they help me out and all that.
Must be good to be at home though as well, isn't it?
Yeah, geez, especially in these times, like the horrible times at the moment. So even be around my family and friends again, it gives me even a confidence boost, if you want to say, just because you're around great people again. Like,
so will you be travelling up and down for training, is it, or will you be moving to Waterford, or how is it going to work?
I don't know exactly what the plan is yet. I'd like to kind of do half and half, so stay at home for maybe a few days and then go up there for a few days, but obviously it depends on the regime of training and stuff and games, so I'm not 100% sure yet what will happen.
It's just 3 weeks as well to go to the start of the league, so you've plenty of time to get training, I suppose, and to get to know your new teammates ahead of the start of the season.
Yeah, no, look, I'm looking forward to getting to training with the lads now, like, because as soon as I got told I was going to them, I couldn't wait to get started, like, because I've seen that they send some very, very good players. And as I said, Kevin Sheedy said that the team is great, and I've heard one or two things about the team as well, so I just can't wait to get started with them now, instead of playing games and winning games in the league stuff.
A tricky start as well away to Drogheda United, but I suppose the thing about the League of Ireland is there's no easy games in any stage of the competition, I guess.
No, yeah, geez, they're all great teams, like, so it's going to be very competitive throughout. There won't be one easy game, like as you said, so that's kind of the best thing that I'm looking at now, is I'm going to be coming up against some very, very good teams, so it'll test my ability and only make me better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and Cork City have signed a Preston midfielder on loan, Jack Baxter. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, so me and Jack, we've actually played with the U team all the way up. Like, but Jack's a very good, very good player as well. Like, very good in the ball. He's like a defensive midfielder, the number six role, you want to call it. So the fella can find the pass for you. Like, so he's a good player in my eyes, anyway. So he'll do well when he goes to Cork City, I think.
Excellent. Adam, thanks for talking to us today. Looking forward to seeing you in action for Waterford. Very best luck for the season ahead.
Thanks very much.
The Big Red Bench on Cork Shot FM, that is Adam O'Reilly there, speaking about his move to Waterford on loan until June. So very best of luck to Adam with Waterford, and very best of luck to him. Looking forward to seeing him in action for Waterford throughout the course of the campaign. Getting close now, getting very, very close to the start of the season in the First Division. The Premier Division kicking off 2 weeks on Friday, the First Division kicking off a week later on the 26th. Cork City and Cove Ramblers at Turner's Cross. How good a game is that going to be for the first game in the First Division? Really looking forward to that game. Right, still to come on the show, we're going to talk rugby with Tom Savage and Three Red Kings. That's coming up next.
The Big Red Bench.
Game on.
Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
Welcome back to the show. It's all over between Chelsea and Manchester United. Finished scoreless. William Esler was at Stamford Bridge.
Chelsea 0, Manchester United 0, and a draw that really benefits neither team. United lose further ground at the top of the table. They're now 12 points behind Manchester City. Meanwhile, Chelsea failed to take advantage of West Ham's defeat yesterday and remain outside the top four. A game with only a few moments of quality in an otherwise niggly affair. At Stamford Bridge, it finished Chelsea 0, Manchester United 0.
Yeah, not one that's going to live long in the memory there. Sheffield United and Liverpool rounding off today's action. Team sheets are in. Davieson.
Two changes for Liverpool from the Merseyside derby defeat. The injured Jordan Henderson is replaced at centre-back by Nat Phillips. Jurgen Klopp has given Alisson the match off after the terrible news of his father's death in an accident in Brazil. Adrian comes in goal. Two changes for Sheffield United, who've been hit by injuries as well. Oliver Norwood comes back, but Chris Basham is out, so Ethan Ampadu drops into defence. Billy Sharp is replaced up front by David McGoldrick. At Bramall Lane, it's Sheffield United against Liverpool.
We're going to talk rugby now, and earlier on today I got a chance to catch up with one of my favourite rugby writers, Tom Savage from 3redkings.com, to discuss Ireland's win over Italy, Italy's future in the Six Nations, Joy Carbery's return to Munster, and plenty more. All right, joined on the line now by Tom Savage from 3redkings. Tom, how are you, sir?
Not too bad at all now. How are you?
I'm good, sir. First off, before we get into Ireland and Munster, how have you found covering rugby in the pandemic over the last 12 months?
It's, weirdly enough, been almost identical to what it was the year or two before. Mm-hmm. My work week really is exactly the same. It's just that now nobody else has a life either. So it's pretty much been relatively straightforward whenever mm-hmm. there's been rugby on. It's just, I think it's a killer when there are no crowds. It makes the spectacle a little bit weirder. But it's you, like everything, I think you kind of get used to it after a while, and now it's just focusing on the game itself, which can be good. But I think that everything is a little bit quieter and everything's a little bit less intense when there is no crowd. And I think that's something I think you see in the Six Nations, you see it in big Heineken Cup games. I think it's something that everybody misses, and it's especially true when you're covering the games week to week.
Yeah, one bonus, I think, for us journalists has been the advent of online Zoom press conferences, which has made access to like the Ireland team, the Munster team, a lot easier.
Oh, very much so, yeah. Like, as in, it's one of those things where if, you know, that's in Limerick and you're in Cork or in Dublin, that's a difficult enough thing to get to, you know? So, like, having access to those, I think it gives a more kind of broader coverage, I think, and allows for, you know, I think kind of a more voices involved, and in some ways more people to help promote the game in the country, which I think is only a good thing.
Just looking back on Ireland's win yesterday, it's a 6-try win for Ireland. Was it a good performance? Is it a case of, given how poor Italy are, you can't really read too much into it?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I think if you look at Ireland's win in isolation, it's a good performance. Lots of nice tries, lots of stuff that I think that Ireland have been looking to show over the last number of weeks. But if you go back to October of last year, Ireland beat Italy 50 points to 10 in the Aviva Stadium, and then a week or two later went to Paris and really underperformed against France. So I think we have very recent examples of how the win here might not translate to what Ireland will ultimately be judged on in this tournament, which will be an away game to Scotland and then a home game against England, who are looking vulnerable, yes. But I think if you focus a little bit too much on how good Ireland looked against this particular Italian side, I think there's a danger of not really seeing the wood for the trees, because I think from a collision perspective, Ireland haven't had this kind of dominant gain line against the team since maybe the last time they played Italy. So my question is, it was good, certainly, and you give credit where it's due, but Ireland don't judge themselves against how they do against Italy. It'll be those next two games against Scotland and England that will be the important ones.
There was a lot of, I suppose, flak sent Ireland's way after the opening two games following the two defeats. Was that deserved in your view?
Yes. I think if they are not performing up to scratch, and remember, this is an Ireland side recently who, you know, 2018, they won a Grand Slam, beat the All Blacks the same year. That is not an eon ago. That is quite recently. So I think Ireland's slip in results since then has been a sequence. It's not just been something that's happened since Andy Farrell took over. This is something that's been in play for quite a while. So I think Ireland are at the product now, or at the end result of maybe 2 years of pretty poor results, a poor World Cup, and then the Six Nations games where Ireland have lost to England now four times in a row. They've lost to France twice in a row for the first time since 2011. There's a feeling that results are beginning to dip, and with that there will be criticism and there will be focus on, well, what are Ireland actually trying to do? You look at Ireland's results and performances during 2019, the last year of the Schmidt era, you would say, and a lot of those performances were pretty stodgy stuff. And I think there's been a clamour for Ireland to play a more expansive game of rugby. You look at the way that Japan beat Ireland, for example, in the World Cup. There's a natural focus to kind of go, well why aren't we playing like that? And I think the people, Mike Catt's been brought in to try and play a style of rugby a little bit closer to what people want. That will take time to bring in. But when it doesn't work and you're losing games against Wales, who Ireland beat repeatedly last year, and France, there will be a focus. And I think last week, Mike Catt started to... There was a feeling that he kind of threw his players under the bus, but I think it's a two-way thing. He is responsible for the attack, for the direction that they take, but players have to execute as well. Yesterday, both structure and players really performed. But the caveat to that is, it's Italy.
Yeah, I think that's the caveat for a lot of right. Yeah, it is Italy. Gary Doyle on the 42.e today was making the case for Italy's removal from the Six Nations to be replaced by Argentina or South Africa. Would you be in favour of the removal to be replaced by either of those countries?
Well, I mean, they've lost 30 games in a row now in the Six Nations. I think if you look at the teams that would be kind of slightly below the Six Nations level, perhaps Fiji, Georgia for certain, Italy have beaten these teams relatively consistently, but it's the kind of concept of relative improvement. Italy are improving, but it's a bit like when you're talking about improving, like Ireland have been talking about, like in the weeks prior to this, like that. When you look at that, you'd go, well, okay, improving, but you're still losing. that's ultimately what Italy are doing too. They're improving, but not relative to other teams. They're just not catching up, and loss after loss after loss. Look, I mean, Ireland know what it's like to be in that situation where, like, Ireland in the 90s was not a great place to go when you're looking at test rugby results. You know, Ireland were finishing in the bottom two, getting wooden spoons. You know, so you look at Ireland in that context, people could have easily said the same about them. Ireland improved. I think that what Italy are trying to do is to build a new young generation of players. They're bringing those through en masse. That will lead to ugly performances like they've seen against France. Better against England, but yesterday was another pretty ugly performance too. I'm not in favour of seeing Italy dumped out of the tournament, to be honest. I think that they're a good rugby country, a good place to go. I think they're a valuable part of the Six Nations just from the kind of the cultural part of it. Results will have to come at some point. But I think that rugby over the last 10 years in particular has gotten increasingly complex and increasingly physical. And that kind of stuff is not just, it isn't just about passion and scoring tries. It's become an incredibly technical game. And that's the kind of thing that Italy, I think, are kind of catching up on relatively a fair bit slower than everybody else.
From, I suppose, a Munster fan's perspective, a lot of eyes on Craig Casey yesterday, and a lot of people excited for his debut. How comfortable did he look at this level yesterday?
Well, unbelievable. I mean, you look at Craig Casey, since he's kind of made his breakthrough into the Munster team, I think over the last two seasons, he's looked incredibly comfortable at every level. Pro 14 games, Champions Cup games, big Interpro games, and now at Ireland level. Yes, it was against Italy, but a lot of the qualities that Craig Casey showed in this game, like you would easily scale to Scotland or France or whatever. He's just an incredibly talented player, and I think a lot of it comes down to just his mentality. I mean, he's incredibly skilled, of course, but nothing seems to faze him. A lot of the time with young players, you get into camp, Ireland camp, and it's a mentally exhausting place to be. There's so much to take in, depending on your position. There's so much to learn, as in just from a sort of an intellectual basis, never mind the kind of increased physicality. So a lot of guys come out of camp exhausted, mentally weary. But you look at Craig Casey, and he's a guy who just, you know, didn't get minutes off the bench against France 2 weeks ago. So came out desperate to play against Edinburgh for Munster, did so, played incredibly well, and then back into Ireland camp, and just nothing seemed to faze him. Came off the bench, played like a guy, didn't look like it was his debut really, you know? Really, really strong, and he's a guy who there's nowhere in this game he can't go. If he has a bit of luck with injuries, this is a guy who can go very, very far.
You surprised he didn't start yesterday?
Not really. I think Andy Farrell was under pressure for a result here, first and foremost. I mean, you look at the recent results that Ireland have had against Italy, and you could see that there were some aspects of this, you know, win was quite predictable. But Andy Farrell was thinking more, not just about this game, but about the Scotland game, looking to build cohesion in the group that really Ireland have lacked over the last while, and try to build on the momentum. You know, because I think from Andy Farrell's perspective, he could have started a lot of younger players here, but they more than likely would not have started against Scotland. So you look at him trying to build, well, good confidence, nice try scored, let's roll that now into Scotland, is probably the thinking. But again, it comes down to when results are poor, it's difficult for a coach to kind of throw caution to the wind to a certain extent by using his wider squad, using younger players. There's always the clamour and finding a balance between, okay, well, we have to develop younger players, but also a coach runs on wins. If Ireland were to throw in a very new unit against Italy yesterday, there's a possibility that could have been a very sticky result.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have cost Andy Farrell his job if Ireland had lost that game. But it's, you know, I'll say this. Everybody will forget this game by the time the Scotland game comes around, maybe even the England game. You won't remember much details about this.
Yeah.
Had Ireland lost this game or come really close to losing it, that's a game that would stick long in the memory and would hurt the coach's tenure.
Certainly so. Talk to me about the impact that Paul O'Connell has had from a coaching perspective. He's brought in to work with the line-out, Ireland's line-out yesterday. I think in the first half alone, 5 line-out wins, 2 steals. So whatever he's doing seems to be working.
Yeah, I think that Ian Henderson has spoke during the week about that what Paul O'Connell is kind of doing is just kind of simplifying a lot of the stuff that they were doing, working on some of the basics that everybody kind of thought they knew and just kind of going back to those. Like, as in Ireland's lineout in the 2 weekends so far of this season of the Six Nations has been the least effective lineout in the tournament with regards to producing the sort of pictures that they want to do, basically because you want to launch off those. But when you look at Ireland's lineout yesterday, pretty flawless, you know, and that position gave them ample opportunity to get after Italy in the midfield. I mean, look at Italy's midfield. There's basically three fly halves there or guys who could play in that position. So Ireland, if they got any sort of solid platform, would be able to launch into those guys, get the sort of dominant gain line that they used to win the game. And that's a large part of what the lineout's there. It's there. It's not just on its own. It's there to serve the wider function of the team. And Paul O'Connell, he's a guy who just seems to be bringing a little bit more simplicity, a little bit more like just give a picture to the hooker that is predictable. And when you have that, guys will make throws for the most part. It's all relative to the pressure that you get put under as well. Scotland will provide a different challenge, of course. But yesterday was a good continuation of some of the stuff that we've seen throughout the tournament. Good, but will definitely need improvement.
Yeah, and Scotland now to come in 2 weeks. Scotland, of course, haven't had a game this weekend, so it'll be 4 weeks since they've last played. Is that going to have an impact on them?
Maybe. You look at them, they've been in pretty good form for the most part. They played incredibly well against England. They were unlucky to cough up a loss against Wales, but that just seems to be how Wales have been going over the last couple of weeks. They would have been looking forward to that game against France. They beat France last year, and I think they stacked up quite well with them, but that game's obviously chalked off. Will the week rest up a few minds? Will it rest up the body a little bit? Will they come in fresh, ready to go? Or will they be a bit like England where, you know, some of those guys haven't really played for long stretches to this season? Now, this is only 1 week off, which is slightly different, but that little small percentage point of not being fully match sharp, it counts a lot at test level. And that's something I think that, you know, Ireland have consistently beaten Scotland over the last number of years. Scotland are a team who've, they're not shy about talking about how confident they are, how good they think they're doing. This is going to be a very big game. And I think that Scotland will certainly back themselves to be a bad matchup for Ireland. But whether or not that week off is a damage to them, we'll have to wait and see. But I think that I have a feeling it could be good for them. And I think that when you look at the performance they need from their front five, it could well be an important factor.
Actually, speaking of England, any sympathy for them considering the controversial nature of Wales' first two tries yesterday?
Not really, because it's England. But, you know, but at the same time, you would look at that first try and you kind of switch the jerseys and think if that's a green jersey, you're furious, really. You know, it's one of those ones where you're giving it, you know, he's telling them to talk to his team. He's still doing that. There's water boys in the field. And he allows in a cross-field kick. But look, England lost this game by more than two tries. Their discipline in the second half in particular was just shocking. That's been a factor for them all season. They have been steadily conceding more and more penalties every single year. This year has been remarkable, like as in their penalty count against Scotland was ridiculous. It was the same here now against Wales. They beat Italy, but everybody's been doing that for the last number of years. So again, you're looking at their next game now against France. That's a colossal game for them. They're not going to be looking into that one and thinking, geez, you know, we'll try and develop guys now. They need to get a win on the board, you know? And they're a bit like Ireland at the moment where their stuff is not really working now. And is that because a lot of the Saracens guys that are the core of that team haven't really played any rugby? A guy like Mario Batoji just looked a few percentage points off in this game yesterday. And he's a top, top quality player. But if these guys aren't playing, those small little dips, they can be enough to hurt you at test level. And like that's something where, you know, I expected England to win that game yesterday, but it just didn't really pan out at all. And so I think from their perspective now, they're in a bit of a crisis with regards to the context of the Six Nations. They need a result from somewhere. Ireland are the same, so it's set up for a big game in 2 weeks in the Aviva Stadium between those two.
Yeah, it should be an absolute belter. Finally, Tom, just before we wrap up, how good was it seeing Joey Carberry back in a Munster jersey on Friday night?
Oh, fantastic. Look, when Munster signed this guy back in 2018, summer of 2018, they did so with the idea that he was going to be their primary playmaker. You don't sign a guy like that to be a depth guy. He was a guy who they brought in for a specific purpose. Since January 2019, he's played four times for Munster. That's a long time. Now, he is a guy who is incredibly important to what Munster want to do. He's incredibly important to what Ireland want to do. So when he's been out for that long with a series of injuries, that it just happens. Both Munster and Ireland, I think, suffer. So seeing him come back after the guts of a year more of getting himself right physically, where at one point, Munster said he was out indefinitely. That's fantastic to see for Munster, for Ireland, but for the individual, you know, because he's training away, he's trying to rehab. it's a tough business. You're wondering, like, as in, will I ever get back out there? What's the story? And like to see him come back out and play pretty well in that last 15 minutes, but especially that penalty right, or the conversion right towards the end. That's exactly the Joey Carberry that was there prior to his injury. Just a guy who can land him from anywhere. It just looked like the old Joey Carberry. And look, Munster won't rush him. He's a guy who will need to get his fitness back again. But great to see him back out there, and you can only hope for more of it.
Yes, certainly. And overall, Tom, how impressed have you been with Munster so far this season?
Pretty good. Like, you look at the way that Munster are trying to play. That game against Cardiff, in some aspects, was an illustration of almost, look, the first time that they have a game in a number of months where there's not rain or wind or a big heavy pitch. They're almost overplayed at times. But what they're building is impressive. Like, they've won, like, they have the best away record in the Pro 14 this season. They've won away in Claremont. You look at the way that they're trying to play and some of the guys that they're bringing through, the likes of Gavin Coombs looks like an unreal player. Some of the other younger players too. Josh Witcherly is impressed and will get more opportunities soon. Ben Healy and others. They're building something, I think, that it's quite good. And you look at where they're looking to go, a Pro 14 final, probably another game against Leinster, maybe Ulster. An opportunity to win a trophy, I think, could really kick this group on. But you look on the whole what they've done, I think they've been quite good. But again, it needs to happen against Leinster in big games. That's where the kind of the real judgment will happen, I think, for this group this season. There's a Champions Cup, an extended knockout period coming too. I think they're in a good position. Carberry back fully fit, maybe Argie Snaiman coming into the mix as well. I think they have the capacity there to be a serious threat in Europe and domestically, but it'll just come down to those big games. Can they beat Leinster? If they can beat Leinster the next time they play this season, there could be a trophy.
Fingers crossed. And yeah, Tom, thanks very much for talking to us. Before we wrap up, tell us what's happening on 3RedKings.com.
On 3RedKings this week, I'll be looking at the Munster game. I'll be looking at the Ireland game and trying to go into the details of Ireland's lineout and the performance this over the last couple of weeks and how it improved against Italy and where it might improve against Scotland. So that's on 3RedKings.com this week.
Excellent. Tom, as always, a pleasure. Thanks very much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Tom Savage there from 3RedKings.com. Be sure and check that website out. Fantastic resource, fantastic analysis of Ireland and Munster games available there. We're going to hear briefly from Andy Farrell speaking after last night's win.
How pleased are you with that performance? How much of what you wanted to see did you actually see?
Well, first of all, I'm really proud of the players. You know, they've shown the real character over the last couple of weeks. It's not nice going after two losses and waiting a couple of weeks to try and put that right. And you know, we talked about it's a test of character, and they've stayed strong. They stay very united together, and as a group, I think they've all pulled together and showed the leaderships in different ways. And I thought we earned the right to score some points with the way that we approached the game in the first half. I thought our attitude was top class. We approached the game in the right manner. We paid the game the right respect, and Italy the right respect. And I thought we punched away really well in the first half, and the game opened up in the end.
I just ask you how tight it is to give Craig Casey and Ryan Baird their debut, and how big a future can they have with Ireland?
I've just said to them there that the two guys, I was waiting for the nerves to kick in all week. They was absolutely nerveless, and an absolute credit to themselves and to the families. And again, you know, in these COVID times, I feel for the families not to be able to come out to Rome and see that experience, because the sons were outstanding. You know, they became men today. They got about their jobs quietly all week, and the nerves never really set in at all. And the only thing that I asked of them today was to be themselves, and there was that in spades. So I thought they was outstanding. And then the other guys, obviously Robbie Henshaw. I don't know what else we can say about Robbie other than he was top class, top draw today. Some players put pressure on themselves when they reach milestones, and the other players just grab the occasion by their own hands and embrace the pressure. embrace the occasion, etc., and take the game to the opposition. And from minute one, I mean, that was an outstanding performance from Robbie in that first 40 minutes. So well done to the three of them.
Can I just ask you about Jordan and then the three front row guys who came off? What were their injury issues, and are there any more?
There's a few niggles that we need to assess in the morning, especially after the flight at home this evening. So we'll see how people pull up. Jordan had a little bit of a tightness in his hip flexor, so we had Earlsey on early enough because we didn't want to take a risk there. Tig had just gone over his ankle, but he seemed to walk off pretty well. Ron has just got a dead calf, so he's going to be good. And David Kilcorn failed his HIA, but he's in good spirits in the changing room as well.
That's Andy Farrell speaking after yesterday's win over Italy. A 2-week gap now for Ireland after yesterday's game, and a good performance against what is to be said, look, a poor Italy side. But it's Scotland next Sunday, 14th March, 3 o'clock kickoff for that one. So a 2-week break now for Ireland ahead of that game. In the Pro 14, Leinster 28-21 up on Glasgow Warriors, 55 minutes on the clock, and Shamrock Rovers beating Cork City by 2-1 in their pre-season friendly in Tallaght. Cian Murphy with Cork City's goal there in that game. Alright, on Friday the new FAI CEO Jonathan Hill held his first press conference and had a lengthy chat with the media. I was on the conference call, and he spoke a lot about Irish football, international fixtures, and the decision to broadcast First Division and Women's National League games as part of the new LOI TV streaming service. So this is a little bit of Jonathan Hill talking about that.
I think that was an important announcement for us to make, and look, we're also we're very thankful to our partners at RTE, not least because they are going to be our main broadcast partner for our live games as well, but for also supporting us in relation to the Watch LOI service. Look, I genuinely believe that this is something that we as an association need to do and needed to do last year as much as this year, from a very simple perspective of it being a service for the fans. And that's what I see this for. So I'm really pleased that we're able to extend the service from last year into the First Division games, and as you say, also into the Women's National League for the first time. And we are going to make those Women's National League games free of charge, so anyone can access them, which I think is again another positive step in our support of women's football. So yes, it was important to get that message out. It was important that the clubs understood how they can interact with the service, if you like, because clearly in a scenario whereby it looks as if we will be playing behind closed doors until the end of the first phase, so the first 14 rounds until the end of May, the clubs wanted to understand how they could market their own season tickets, if you like, in the context of a COVID situation, but with the support of a streaming service. So, yeah, we were really pleased to get that that announced. Well, we are hopeful that we will have some fans back into the stadia for the second part of the season. But clearly we can't anticipate that now at the moment. But if we do, then the streaming service in theory becomes less necessary in terms of the service to those fans who go to the games. But the service will still be there. So those fans that may not be able to get to the matches will still be able to use it. As I say, we the FAI have invested into a system which is called Pixalot, where the cameras will allow not just to have all of those games covered, but also it does give a very useful service to our to the coaching teams at the clubs, actually, in relation to player analysis. So those cameras aren't going anywhere. There will be a streaming service for the second half of the season. It's just that we hope that it'll be in the context of fans being able to get back and watch their teams play, which I guess everybody is hoping for.
The Pixalot coverage on the First Division and the Women's National League, will there be any commentary or any additional production on that, or is that an option for clubs to bring on board like some of the other sports might have done towards the end of last year?
Yeah, I think at First Division level and Women's National League level, that is the type of creative discussion we're going to have with the individual clubs. And we know that there are people across all of those clubs and maybe local radio stations who could provide commentary, etc., in relation to those games. The most important thing, I think, was to get the feed sorted. And actually, the pictures that you get from the Pixlot system are remarkably good. And so I'm really genuinely pleased that we are able to say that we will be broadcasting all of those League of Ireland and Women's National League games. But we will we'll be talking with the clubs. Clearly, only last night that we finally presented to them as to what the approach was going to be. But we'll talk with them to talk about those additional production issues, if you like.
You've got an existing sort of portfolio of good, strong sponsors,
yep.
Nissan, Boots, Aviva. Have you had a chance to meet with, in a virtual sense or a real world sense, with any of those sponsors at the moment? And are they all fully committed and on board?
Sure. Well, I reached out to all of them when I was announced back in November. We actually have a meeting next week of all of the sponsors and partners, and where we'll speak to them in the round. And yes, I think we have all of their support. We have a couple more announcements to make in relation to renewals of deals, which I'm very happy about. Clearly, I was very happy that we had the announcements that we had with SSE Airtricity, and in particular, on the basis that they had been contemplating moving out of Irish football, if you like. But after discussions with them, we persuaded them to come back in, but not just to come back in relation to the men's leagues, but also to support the Women's National League, which we...
That's Jonathan Hill, the new FAI CEO, talking about the new LOI TV streaming service, which is fantastic news for the First Division and the Women's National League games. We're really looking forward to watching Cork City games on LOI TV and Cove Ramblers games this year, and Cork City's women's team as well on that service. Fantastic stuff indeed. But that is us for tonight. Thank you very much indeed for tuning our way. Our podcast will be online shortly. You can get that on redfm.ie or from wherever you get your podcast from. Yesterday's show available there as well. Valerie talking to Gemma O'Connor about her career, as she called it a day, with Cork earlier on in the week. So you can get that there as well. Connor Halpin's up next with Green on Red. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday evening, folks. I'll talk to you next Sunday.
The Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.